This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Happy Labor Day. Welcome to Eco Radio KC here on 90.1 FM, KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. On August 22nd, there was a gala grand opening of the new wind plant in South Kansas City, capping off an eight-year effort to get the weapons plant moved from the Bannister Federal Complex to South Kansas City. Three people were arrested on the outside. There were over 50 people out there in protest, and dignitaries such as Emmanuel Cleaver and Vicky Hartzler and the Secretary of Energy were on the inside. My name's Mike Murphy, and Craig Lubow is joining us here on Eco Radio KC this evening. Good evening, Craig.
Good evening.
And also joining us are Jim Hanna and Ann Sullentrop, who were out there among those who were protesting. In fact, Jim was one of the folks who got arrested. And so there's a lot to talk about here today, isn't there, Craig?
Yes.
So but perhaps we should just set the stage and let folks know that this is a complex that dates back to actually part of it was signed into being by Harry Truman, according to what I heard, while he was a senator, before he became president, even. It's been known as the Bendix plant, the Allied Signal plant, all these years out on Bannister Road, and now it's moved 8 miles south from there. And much more efficient, a greener, cleaner machine is what we're hearing from the folks in the government, and I'm hearing some snickering in the room here about that.
Mike, I had read an article in The Pitch in 2009 that indicated at that time it was 60 years old when they were preparing to close it.
Wow.
Yeah, it started in 1949. It makes non-nuclear parts, what they refer to as non-nuclear parts. Actually, they do have access and dealings with nuclear materials of some type. They don't manufacture the atomic things that blow up, like plutonium and uranium, but they do deal with that in their work. Some of their workers have been exposed and become ill behind that. What they do make is the wherewithal to bring that plutonium and uranium to thousands of miles away and set it off. In my mind, it's like the parts of a gun that propel the bullets, and the bullets are the uranium and the plutonium. And it's Kansas City plant is the linchpin in the system. It's one of eight major sites throughout the U.S. that together make nuclear weapons for the United States. And Kansas City makes 85% of the parts for nuclear weapons. There would be no nuclear weapons without Kansas City.
Wow. So I'm curious as to what you guys, what bothers you more about this, the building of this new plant or the abandoning of this old plant without cleaning it up?
Well, I think, the modernization of the whole complex is what's on board here. They have plans to upgrade and modernize so-called every major plant. There have been plans worth billions of dollars to upgrade the plant in Tennessee that makes the uranium secondaries and also another plant in Los Alamos, New Mexico, where it all started. And this is in the face of the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, which, the U.S. is part of, and it says that we are to get rid of our nuclear weapons, not, mess around with them and upgrade and make more modern ones. We're supposed to be getting rid of them. And And, you know, that was in 1970, I believe.
That's right.
You know, so they're talking in their speeches out at the plant last Friday about, oh, we know this is going to go on for decades more, you know, like it's going to go on the rest of the century. Well, I've got news for them. There's movement all over the world to get rid of nuclear weapons. 40% of countries, mostly in the southern hemisphere, are tired of it. They're tired of living under this. They don't have nuclear weapons, and they want us to get rid of ours. And the Marshall Islands, who were bombed repeatedly when we were testing our nuclear weapons back in the day, they are suing in international court, ICC, and calling not only the U.S., but the other nuclear nations to account and saying, hey, you know, it's time to get rid of them.
I want to, you referred about some of the goings on the inside. I want to play a clip from what happened at the grand opening on Friday. Tom Clymer actually suggested, Tom Clymer, who recorded this for us, was on the inside and has already aired this on Tell Somebody. So thanks to Tom for that. He suggested this clip by the Secretary of Energy, whose name is Moniz, mm-hmm. I believe.
Ernest Moniz.
Yeah. So let's hear this clip, and then I want to get feedback from both of you guys.
Important right here in our Kansas City plant. And then finally, of course, the nuclear security mission, which this plant is dedicated to. Let me put that in a little bit of context. The president has, in his nuclear security policy speeches, he has laid out a long-term vision of a world without nuclear weapons. But we all know that is many decades in the future. In the meantime, we, the Department of Energy, with our partners, DOD, private sector, etc., we have a responsibility for maintaining a safe and reliable stockpile in the absence of nuclear testing for two decades already and many decades into the future. This is an enormous challenge.
All right. That was Secretary of Energy Moniz, and I'd like to get your feedback from you, Jim. Any comments on that?
Well, I have a real sense of dissonance as I hear that, because I keep thinking back to 2009 and when President Obama went to Prague and he promised the world and he promised those of us who are citizens of the United States. He said, I'll just quote him, "I state clearly and with conviction America's commitment to seek the peace and security of a world without nuclear weapons." And then he pledged, "To put an end to Cold War thinking, we will reduce the role of nuclear weapons in our national security strategy and urge others to do the same." The dissonance I hear in that is I hear him making this pledge, and really a pledge in harmony with our 1970 commitment to the world, saying those the few nations at that point, five, that had nuclear weapons, they will move towards the reduction and elimination of their nuclear weapons if the rest of the world will pledge not to develop nuclear weapons, which by and large they have. There have been four other nations that have come on board and joined the nuclear club, but by and large there are still, you know, 120 nations that are abiding by that. And it's hard for me to see that we are abiding by that when we don't seem to be moving towards reduction, you know, build a new plant here, which over the next 20 years may involve as much as $5 billion, and to say that we're reducing, if you kind of follow the money, it's kind of hard to see that that's really the avenue we're taking.
Do you have anything to add to that, Anne?
Well, the thing is that this plant, it was kind of a weird financial deal here. It's privately owned by CenterPoint Zimmer, a local real estate company and a company from Chicago, and the city owns title to this plant. And in 20 years after the federal government leases, pays lease agreement, the private company will get the plant in the grounds back for $10. And the thing is, they're also bragging in Friday's speeches that this was a wonderful model for how to finance things throughout the complex, such as in Tennessee and Los Alamos. And the thing is, they had to go against the standing anti-deficiency law. It's a federal law, and it prohibits the federal government from entering into a contract that is not fully funded, because doing so obligates the government in the absence of appropriations adequate to meet that contract. And so they had to get sort of a variance, they call it, a little waiver from the Office of Management and Budget. And it was considered to be a very, very serious matter at the time. And there had been smaller private, financing schemes throughout the nuclear weapons complex, but this was a big deal. And that office said at the time, they will never allow this again. And so it might be brought up also that at the sort of the beginning of this all in 2006, the Natural Resource Defense Council that works to protect our environment and filed a NEPA litigation against this, and it was joined by others in the anti-nuclear complex. That would be Tri-Valley Cares from California and Nuclear Watch New Mexico and our own Physicians for Social Responsibility Kansas City joined in that lawsuit.
And what was the claims raised in the NEPA
well,
lawsuit?
They were, saying that, for one thing, the area that they picked, they said that it was blighted. It was a productive soybean field. There's nothing blighted about it. There was a few items of trash that were tossed off in one corner. Well, you know.
The advantage of calling it blighted was because that made it eligible for tax incentives.
And that was
funds.
For funds that should have helped the inner city, and it was not appropriate use of those funds. And, the current plant, the one that they just left, is highly, highly contaminated. Sierra Club member, forget his name right off the top here, but he said it's a festering hellhole, and it would be...
The term he used that I remember, and I probably always remember, is he referred to the old site as being polluted into perpetuity.
There you go. Mm.
There's no way to remediate this. There's no way to fix the damage that's been done there.
900 toxins were used, and they're available on the website for anyone to see. And 150-some...
On what website would that be?
It would be on the... Department of Labor website, if I'm not mistaken. I've gone to it many times and printed it out and so forth. And there's 50 feet under the ground, there's a collection of this material. They're looking into it right now to detail exactly what contamination is where. It's called a Description of Current Conditions Report that they're doing. They put out a preliminary one, but they're working on the final one. And this company called from Chicago, CenterPoint, is actually going to get the contract, is what I've heard, to clean up the old plant. And we're concerned that it will not be cleaned up to residential standards because it is in the middle of a residential area. Poor people live right across the street. Little kids, pregnant ladies, there are a few pump and treat, sites at the Bannister Federal Complex, but that's not really cleaning it up.
So this is at Bannister and Lydia, basically just east of Troost.
Yeah, and the place has been in the news. I think it was 2010. the Channel 41 was doing a whole series on all the people that were made sick and that have died from working out there, and half of them probably didn't even work at the actual Kansas City plant. They worked in other areas, you know, that were just like bookkeepers and whatnot.
IRS.
Yeah.
They
worked for the GSA.
Federal offices. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And there is a nationwide EEOICPA is the name of it. It's a law that was passed in 2000. It was supposed to compensate nuclear workers nationwide. And the problem is that is not being administered well. It's through the Department of Labor, and people are denied, and then they die. We hear that story constantly. And the other thing about the whole nuclear enterprise nationwide is they polluted every single place they've been. They polluted all the major rivers in the U.S., and this is something you never hear in the mainstream media.
Wow.
Thank God for KKFI.
Yeah, amen. I want to go back to something that you touched on earlier, because it seems a bit confusing about who the owner is. So you mentioned Centerpoint Zimmer, this outfit out of Chicago that, by the way, might get the contract for the cleaning up of the old plant. You also mentioned the city has some kind of sense of ownership in this as well. What I was right there at the line when Jim Hanna, who's sitting right here, and Henry Stover and Mark Bartholomew were arrested, and right before they were arrested, they were kind of warned, and then I think when they actually said, "I'm putting you under arrest," it was for trespassing on Department of Energy property. So who exactly owns this?
Yeah, but they were taken to the city jail, right, Jim?
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a city trespass charge. The Planned Industrial Expansion Authority of the city, it was set up by state law, but the city appoints all the people on this PIEA, and all their actions come before the city council for approval. So they're the ones that have the title. So the city owns it right now.
So, but I don't think that was a mistake that this guard, I don't think it was a policeman, I think it was someone of the other guy that was a hired, you know,
guard for Honeywell.
Yeah, for Honeywell.
Yeah,
guard.
The Honeywell is a corporation that runs it.
I think
he
was at the old Bannister plant when folks got arrested back at the end of May. I think it was the same guy. I don't think that was an accident. Clearly he was told to say that, you know, who are we owned by today? You know, I don't think he made a mistake. I think, you know, that was.
Well, he's a guard for Honeywell, so, you know, he would say that, but. I don't know. The police arrested him, took him to city jail, so it's a city charge, and it's a few hundred dollars total to go through that. It's just if you're going to get arrested for justice, that's a pretty good way to start, I'd say. It's not a federal charge, and they did that, you know, by making it a city-owned facility. It's not owned by the federal government. It's the federal government leases it.
One of the concerns about that that's really pretty troubling is the new plant is being described as a green campus, but one of the supervisors at the old plant, who was very involved for 35 years, says and has repeatedly said that there's no way to do what needs to be done to create the parts that the new plant will be making without using, for instance, heavy metals. And so I know we're much more informed today about how to handle heavy metals more safely and so forth, but his contention is that there's going to be pollution in the new site as well to some extent. And so the concern is if this is all privately owned or even city-owned, who then at the end of the line is going to pay for the cleanup of any contamination that there might be? Because if the government owns it, well, then you have all these deep pockets. You can go into the government and you have a Superfund site to call on, and you can spend millions or whatever is needed to actually really do the cleanup. But who's going to do that in the future? And it makes you wonder whether that's kind of a way of skirting that, if there's not going to be a responsible person at the, you know, at the end of the line.
Jim, question I have, you mentioned Superfund. Is the old site classified as a Superfund site?
Yes, it has 14 known Superfund sites on the property, and myself and the Sierra Club did write a letter to the EPA asking them if they could combine all these sites into one and raise it on the list of priorities, which would enable it to get funding. And this was considered, I think it was over a year, and the regional head of the EPA called me to tell me that they were looking into that, but they ended up basically turning it over to the Missouri Department of Natural Resources to kind of run in with the EPA looking over their shoulder and supervising the cleanup plans.
Is there some advantage from their perspective to listing as 14 separate sites instead of one?
Well, they're thinking that the cleanup will go along more quickly rather than having it on the national priority list and being declared a major Superfund site.
All right.
Hey, we have a caller, but we're going to play a couple messages first, and then we'll take this caller on the air if that's okay. And if anyone else wants to call, the number is 816-931-5534.
Hi, this is Richard Tripp with COP Incorporated, letting you know of a really easy way to help our brothers and sisters survive during this heat wave. It's called Lug-A-Jug. First, fill up a clean jug or plastic bottle with water, then freeze it overnight, and finally, take it with you as you go about your normal business. When you see a homeless person, let them have the jug. It's a simple way to help folks get through this extreme heat. This message is a public service announcement of 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
So, you know, the idea is we're at the breaking point now, you know, in so many ways. Let's make it a tipping point.
2012 Green Party presidential candidate Dr. Jill Stein on the next forum Wednesday at noon.
Oh, and here we are back on Eco Radio KC, and we do have a caller. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
David from Westwood Plaza. I'm a science major in school, and I got a real problem with all this because it's magic when you talk about cleaning up the old plant. That place is contaminated with heavy metals, uranium, depleted uranium, and there's no way to clean it up. You need to dig a real big hole somewhere and line it with a lot of, plastic, and then very carefully take that place apart and put it in that big hole and bury it and hope nobody digs it up. But that's almost impossible. CenterPoint was talking about they're going to do it for like $100 million or something. I thought it was just asinine. It was stupid. But that's all I got to say. I mean, it's just, when you're talking about cleaning something up like that up, that's magic. It can't be done. And then our mayors talk about, well, here after a while, we'll just, we'll develop it, and we'll have businesses there. And I'm like, no, you can't do it. It can't. Nobody should go there ever again. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you. You guys want to comment?
Well, the original estimate on what it was going to cost was much larger than what the estimate is about $135 million, I believe, the last I heard, to do the cleanup or the remediation, which doesn't mean that you've actually cleaned everything up, as this caller says. It just means that you've hopefully contained it in such a way that you can put asphalt or concrete on top of it, and I think that, and then use it for some commercial purpose or something like that. So I would agree with the caller, and I agree with that it is polluted into perpetuity.
He mentioned uranium as one of the substances. Is that correct?
Yes, there was a limited amount of uranium there. There was promethium. A woman stepped in that, and she's gone through three, I think, separate surgeries and nearly died. And she had guys in hazmat suits come to her house and so called clean it up. There was a spill of some kind. She was a cleaning woman.
And if they were only making non-nuclear parts, why would they have chemicals? Why were they working with chemicals?
Because they were working
like
on
that?
Nuclear weapons. And they also have brought in nuclear weapons for, they called it an autopsy. One of the guys that used to work there tells me they would cut it open and there was something wrong with it, so they'd have to diagnose it and fix it and so forth and things like that. And tritium is another substance that was, you know, a guy told us at the dedication last Friday that he found out after 16 years that he had been contaminated with tritium. And so...
Hey, we do have another caller. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and what part of town are you calling from?
My name is John. I'm from Brookside area.
Hi, John. What's up?
Yeah, I haven't been listening the whole show, so you may have already answered my question. But I've heard that the taxpayers of Kansas City, Missouri, are financing the new plant in part, or at least. Is that correct?
Well, there were funds used to build up Botts Road, which was just a little lane, basically. And I forget the number, how many millions of dollars were used to build that fancy interchange. The bonds that were sold were bought by 14 secret investors, and they're getting 5% reimbursement.
Mm-hmm. Interest, yeah.
We haven't, you know, found out who those investors were. We heard a couple that we had a leak, and we don't have
That's
that verified.
Yeah. But who let the bonds? Who issued the bonds?
The city.
So, mm-hmm. you know about how many million it was? Was it like...
Is that 600 million?
Oh, my God.
The whole project was about $700 million.
I can't remember the exact figure.
But. So the citizens of Kansas City, Missouri have kind of borrowed that amount of money, it sounds like, from these investors.
Yeah. I'm not a financial person.
Well, I mean, your bond is it's a loan,
yeah.
You know.
Right.
So the investors have loaned the issuer of the bond the money, so it would be the citizens of Kansas City, Missouri, apparently.
Yeah,
or was it the state?
No, it's the city, I'm pretty
okay,
sure.
Okay, so it's just the citizens of Kansas City, Missouri who are on the hook for the $750 million-plus interest.
I think that's exactly right, and that's...
And the whole thing was that highway work would not have been done were it not for the plant.
Right.
Absolutely. That was just a 180-acre bean field out there.
Wow.
For this.
Okay.
So
thank you very much for taking my call.
Thank you for calling. Was there an environmental impact statement done?
They did an EA. They did not do the full EIS.
Okay.
The environmental assessment is not as rigorous. Yeah.
Well, why not? I mean, this is like a big deal, isn't it?
Well, it is to us, the regular folks, but to the powers that be, the ones that are making money off of this, of course they'd want to not look into it too closely.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many questions that, for me, are unanswered and don't seem to be able to find an answer. Why is it that land, which typically would sell for maybe $3,000 an acre or something like that, just a bean field, why did they pay $26,000 an acre for that land? I just don't understand that. I mean, there's just so many things about it that I don't...
Somebody's getting rich. And another thing is that... you know, the war profiteers that are benefiting from this, this one is Honeywell. It's a company that has ties to, for example, making the Reaper that is part of Israel's, you know, thing with Gaza recently.
Wow.
They make, you know, a killing, you might say, off of drones, the Reaper drone. And... there is a movement now to boycott and divest from Honeywell, and it's at a site called badhoneywell.org. And I'm announcing today that the Physicians for Social Responsibility of Kansas City is going to join this boycott. And there are many things that the average consumer can buy that are made by Honeywell, and we're going to be leafleting and picketing at places where their products are sold. Because this is not right. But nuclear weapons are, I mean, just an obscenity. They're the ones that were dropped in Hiroshima and Nagasaki are like BBs compared to the ones that we have now. The ones that were dropped in Hiroshima and Nagasaki equaled all the firepower of World War II. And the ones now are thousands and thousands of times huge, much bigger. And it's time for these things to just go by the wayside.
Honeywell's always been in...
We have a caller.
Oh, okay.
We have a caller. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and what part of town are you calling from?
Hi there. I'm Jane Stover, and I'm from Overland Park. And I just want to make a little comment because I've been part of the peace people that have been trying to fight this new plant. We were there at city council meetings and at the Planned Industrial Expansion Authority meeting when they were, the Planned Industrial Expansion Authority is an independent agency, but it's all appointed by the mayors of Kansas City and all the people on it. They have no power of their own. Anything they do has to be approved by the Kansas City City Council. It's the Planned Industrial Expansion Authority that holds the title to this new facility. And that's part of why it's like a public-private deal. But some of what I wanted to say was that the lawyer for the city explained to me that even though Kansas City was offering its bonds to be bought by private investors, the federal government would back those bonds. In other words, it was Kansas City's paper, our bonds, that were sold. But the Kansas City money was fairly minimal, just about $10,000 for the construction of the new gorgeous highway structure that they put in to serve the Kansas City plant and to serve the rest of that intermodal system that's out there way far south in Kansas City. I think it's important that we make clear that it's the taxpayers all across the country that are paying for this. But it was the Kansas City bonds that were used, and then the title is held by the Planned Industrial Expansion Authority, this independent agent. So we have members of City Council, for example, saying we don't own it, but advisors have told us, well, this is the Planned Industrial Expansion Authority for Kansas City, not for St. Louis, not for Springfield, Missouri. It's for Kansas City, and that's like a shadow group. At any rate, it's the whole country that's paying for it. Yes, Mike.
Jane, why do you think that the arresting officer said trespassing on Department of Energy property?
It can stand up in court that land has been leased to Department of Energy, and that's what they respect. They respect that in court. However, Vice President for CenterPoint Zimmer said in one of our trials that was held concerning people who did this civil resistance a few years ago, the Vice President for CenterPoint Zimmer said under oath that the Planned Industrial Expansion Authority holds the title to the place.
Okay. Okay, I think you kind of straightened this out here.
Mike, as a legal point, I didn't quite understand one of the things that was said before.
Sure.
But if the Department of Energy is leasing the land from the city, let's say, anybody can institute and file a complaint for trespassing. Mm-hmm. Then it'd be just like if you're renting a house, either the owner of the house that you're renting from or you as a renter could file those trespassing charges.
Thank you.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. Well, I want to get back. So since this has been announced, there's been a concerted effort here on the ground in Kansas City to oppose any progress with this new weapons plant. And there's been, you know, there's been things on the ballot. There's been all sorts of initiatives. You guys have undertaken all sorts of different strategies and tactics. But one of the most persistent things that has been going on is people getting arrested as an act of civil disobedience. What are we up to? Over 100 now.
Oh yeah, well over 100.
About 120 last I counted.
So, and Jim, you were one of the most recent ones. Why?
Yes.
Why did you do this?
Well, I guess it kind of stems back to the. Actually, I received one time for Christmas a Christmas card that was the first picture of Earth from space. And there was something about that that was transforming to me. And I saw the beauty and the oneness of the good Earth. And I grew up on an Iowa farm and all that, very connected to the Earth. And to me, to countenance a weapon of omnicide, we're not just talking about genocide or suicide or something. We're talking about omnicide. We could theoretically not only kill all large animal life forms and ourselves and everything, but we could kill most of the vegetative life and everything else by use of these weapons. And that's just something I just couldn't tolerate. And so when they did the groundbreaking ceremony, I was arrested there. About midway, when they were spending $1 million a day out there, I was arrested, and I wanted to be arrested at this particular occasion when they were dedicating it. And we had our own little dedication ceremony out there with Peaceworks Kansas City as well.
Dedicated, D-E-A-D.
That's right, yeah. And we had a little cask, black casket, and we had black armbands, and we were trying to commemorate the people. They had a list of about 150 people that we know have died at the old plant as a result of contamination and pollution. And we're doing that in trying to avoid having future deaths that are caused as a result of nuclear weapons.
Well, I just want to say I was right there when you guys got arrested, and I was so moved by it. And then within a couple of days, I got this challenge from my nephew, and I was still had you guys in my mind, and so I've tried to incorporate that into this event. So I still haven't figured out how to get this video off my phone, but we're going to play the audio from Mike accepting the bucket challenge. And this, we did this last Tuesday at 63rd and Ward Parkway. So let's hear this.
I was challenged by my nephew, Sean Sprinkles Murphy. He's not only my nephew, he's my godson, which means I was there the first time he had water dumped over his head. Okay? All right. So I'm going to challenge three local heroes, three people who got arrested in protest of the new WMD factory in South Kansas City, and yes, in protest of the fact that they still haven't cleaned up the old one. So I'd like to challenge Henry Stover, Jim Hanna, and Mark Bartholomew to this ALS challenge. I figured they spent some time on ICE, why not have ICE spend some time on them? So, Henry, Jim, Mark,
wait a minute. All right.
I want you to be as cool as me.
All right. That was last week.
Well, I accept your challenge.
Oh, right. That's great. That's great. And Henry's all giddy about it. Henry is going to be at 63rd and Ward Parkway tomorrow, and he's inviting people to come down and douse him with water. He's pretty excited about that. So. And we'll find out more from Jim when he undergoes his challenge. So
thanks
I just
for
wanted
doing
to share that.
Yeah, because my aunt actually died from ALS.
Really?
It's a terrible disease.
It is a terrible
yeah.
thing. It is
yeah.
a terrible thing.
You mentioned the word hero. I had a hero here locally in Kansas City. His name is Richard Rhodes, and he was cited by the Kansas City Star one time as the undisputed oracle of the atomic age. And he wrote a Pulitzer Prize-winning book. He started writing about 35 years ago on this topic. So I consider him to be a really informed expert on the topic of nuclear weapons. And his latest book, called The Twilight of the Bombs, ends on a really hopeful note. He says, if not in my lifetime, probably in the lifetime of my children, and certainly in my children's lifetimes, weapons of mass destruction will be outlawed. In time, possession of a nuclear weapon will be judged a crime against humanity. Such a judgment would only codify what is already an evident fact. That's what I call a hero. And to think that he has studied this all his life, hasn't given up, still has hope, and is still lifting up the possibility, not decades from now, as the as was said at the dedication ceremony, but within, a much shorter time frame than that. And that's the hope that I live in, and I know many other people with Peaceworks Kansas City live in.
And you mentioned some chemicals before that were at the old plant. How do those become a hazard in terms of health? Do you have to have physical contact, or is it an air contaminant, or is it all through water?
One of the frequently cited ones is beryllium, and that was used, I understand, when they milled it or, worked with it. It became airborne, and it is a very light metal. It will float, and it, you know, people inhaled it, they got sensitized to it, and then they also developed borreliosis, and it can be fatal. It's similar to cancer. And I was told that there was beryllium throughout the building, but they were only going to clean it up to about 11 feet throughout the building. And someone said, well, you know, when that the firefighters explosion, you know, that killed the guys out in somewhat that area, the building shook that night, and I'm sure that unsettled some things at that point. Also, during the 80s, there was a big cleanup. You know, the EPA wasn't started until 1970. So during the 80s, there was a lot of commotion and whatnot out there, and a lot of people think that they became sick behind that.
Yeah, I read in some blogs on the Internet, and one person said that there was evidence or something along that line that there was increased incidence of thyroid problems in the area surrounding the plant. Do you know anything about that?
No, I hadn't heard about that.
Okay.
I did ask someone that works in the area of cleanup how far beryllium could go, you know, in the air, and they said, oh, for many miles. And I have had several people come and tell me when we had open house, you know, open town halls for sick workers, they would come and say that whole area around there is thick with cancer.
Is that beryllium? Is that the most dangerous of the chemicals you mentioned?
No, I wouldn't say that. It's okay. Just one of them.
All right.
Yeah. There's TCE is another one, and of course uranium. Depleted uranium was used there, lots of depleted uranium.
What type of health effects would people have from that?
Cancer-causing. There was a group of people that actually had a very rare cancer. There would be like brain cancers, internal organs, other internal organs with cancer that were rare. You know, leukemias, just you name it, a wide variety of illnesses.
Okay.
I'm curious, what's next for you guys? So the plant's open now. Focusing on the cleanup of the old plant, or
the thing about the cleanup of the old plant is the governor will have the power to sign off when they want to. The federal government is going to turn the title over to CenterPoint, is what we're understanding. And at that point, if the governor says, you know, show me the money, then, you know, they're going to have to up the amount of money that is available for cleanup. So that's their Achilles heel, I would say. So that would be a good thing for us to raise our voices about.
So CenterPoint's going to take title. Are they wanting to use that building for something else after they clean it up?
Right, for redevelopment.
Okay. Uh-huh.
So the next, it seems, focus is going to be on the governor himself and what kind of power he can wield.
I might mention, too, that we are going to have a fundraiser here, our yearly fundraiser called the Unplaza Heart Fair. And it's September 20th and 21st. And, you know, it's a thing for local artists and for affordable art as opposed to another art fair that is going on that same weekend.
Call that one the Un Plaza.
Okay. It'll be Saturday 10 to 6 and Sunday 12 to 5 at the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church, 4501 Walnut. No cost to enter on the property and look at the art. And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, we'll be doing some educational things there, and we hope to answer your question. I think that's what we're trying to do, is to just raise public awareness, get people to thinking about something which a lot of people just forgotten about since the Cold War supposedly ended like 30 years ago. But they're still, according to the report I just got this week from the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, they keep track of this as best one can. This is very secretive stuff. But there are supposedly in the world still about 16,300 nuclear warheads, according to their mid-August report. That's a lot. That's a lot of nukes.
If it turns out that, let's say, Centerpoint and people cleaning it up eventually come around to agree with what you and one of the callers said, is that it cannot be cleaned up, if they get into it and they determine that, then what is the option for the building? What would they do to prevent contamination of the surrounding area?
Are you talking about the old plant? Or
right, the old plant.
Yeah.
Well, I would think that what could be taken out should be, because there's two rivers right there, and it's on a floodplain. So if things could be removed, that would be to the good. If they can't, then they would have to be sealed off, I would think.
But this what does removed or taken out mean? And what is
well, I mean, taken away from, you know, the immediate neighborhood there where people right. live. Yeah. They're vulnerable.
And where would it be dumped later?
It would have to be to an appropriate dump.
Yucca Mountain or something?
But that one's been closed, as you know. I mean, that was seismically not safe to have it there, so they spent millions building it, but they're never going to use it. And no one knows what to do with all this radioactive material that we keep making all the time, whether it's in nuclear reactors for energy purposes or whether it's in for nuclear weapons, how to enrich uranium or plutonium, all these things. We have no idea. No, this is one of the big questions that I have that never gets answered. It's like, who knows how to safely store anything for 100 years or, let's say, 1,000 years or 10,000 years or some of these
generations.
Things are even longer than that. And no one's ever convinced me that we know how to store this stuff. So why do we keep manufacturing it?
Good point. There is a country, I think it's Finland, that is digging a deep, deep, deep repository now, and they have questions is when they get the stuff buried there and fill it in, should they or should they not mark it on the top, because they think people in the future may not read their language or whatever symbols they could come up with to warn people, and then people might go, oh, there's something valuable down here, and dig for it. There is a waste, it's called WIP, depository in New Mexico, and this past February they had a radioactive release. And so it's closed for that's it. That was our repository.
And most of these things are just being kept on site in aging containers.
We have another caller, but first we're going to play our last couple of messages, and then we'll be back.
Hello, this is Maria Vasquez Boyd inviting you to tune in this Wednesday for Art Speak Radio from 6 to 7 p.m. This week, local writers Sean Pavey, Norma Cantu, Carl Bettis, Jen Harris, Damon Lee Patterson, Michelle Pond, Jennifer Lee Coates, Miguel Morales, Sandra Moran, and Diego Chi will join me live in the studio to premiere Radio Renga, specially written for ArtSpeak Radio's third anniversary. So tune in or listen online this Wednesday to ArtSpeak Radio.
This week on The Pioneers, Revolution from the Heart of Nature.
I call this century the Sophia Century, when women will take our rightful role in co-equal partnership with men in the world will come into balance.
I'm Neil Harvey. It's Lynn Twist, Layla Salazar, and Oriel Osprey Lake and the Sophia Century this week on The Bioneers.
Friday morning at 9:30, right before Eclectics.
And we do have a caller. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and what part of town you called from?
Yeah, this is Ron Faust from Gladstone, Missouri. And I guess I would like a comment about the contrast I was sensing from what happened in the dedication service. What I overheard was a kind of just glad slapping and feeling good about the plant and praising the workers, as against the protests on outside that was dealing with some real issues about facts and what was going on. I guess my real question is, I'm thinking about the Holocaust, you know, that there was bad things that happened there, but what was the real lesson was that there was decent people that just stood by and allowed it to happen. What would you say is needed in order to bring people into more awareness and into more action? Thank you.
Well, that's what we're trying to do in Peace Works. That's the title of our group, Peace Works. And it's not a matter of being passive at all, you know, and standing back and just, oh, you know, there's nothing we can do. No, we're active, we're creative, we're actively working for peace. And Georgia, who was going to be on the show with us today, but she got bit by a pit bull dog, she is spearheading a nonviolence movement here and having a book called The Nonviolent Life available for study groups. So we promote, you know, getting educated and learning about the nonviolent movement, and also getting organized and doing things, actions. One of the events that we're promoting is Father Charles McCarthy. He's coming to town. He's one of the most powerful voices for nonviolence in the world today. And he'll be speaking at the Precious Blood Center in Liberty, Missouri, October 3rd, 7 to 9 p.m. and Saturday, 9 to 5 during the day. And it's six seven one six o seven one five, and that's Greg Kerbaway, and that's 816-716-0715. And Father McCarthy, he talks about a guy that said to love your enemies and bless those who curse you and do good to those who hate you and pray for those who mistreat you and persecute you. And I think you really meant it.
I believe we're out of time now. I want to thank Jim Hanna and Ian Solentrout for joining us today, talking about the old nuclear plant and the new one. We have a few calendar items. First, on Tuesday, September 9th, the Sierra Club will have a presentation by Craig Volland on mercury pollution. And that, the doors open at 6:30 and the program starts at 7. That's open to the public and is at the Overland Park Lutheran Church at the corner of 79th and Lowell in Overland Park, Kansas. And you enter on the north side. The second item, this is a little bit out of the area, but some people might want to go to it. It's in Mayetta, Kansas, which is near Topeka. It is the Prairie Appreciation Day. That's on Saturday, September 13th, from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. The location says 158th and U Road in Mayetta. The last item is the Kansas City Community Gardens will be celebrating the Fall Family Festival. It's a free day of fun for children and adults, and the Kansas City Community Gardens invites everyone to join them from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. on September 6th. And the event is at the Beanstalk Children's Garden, which is located at 6917 Kensington Avenue, just north of Gregory Boulevard in Slope Park. And that's all I have, and I'll turn it over to Mike.
Yeah, I just one other thing. Ron was just talking about this, so I just wanted to draw people's attention. This is a week from now, except it's so next Monday, and it's at 5 a.m. on Exploration with Michio Kaku. Can scientists be good Germans who simply carry out evil orders? A look at the lives of Wernher von Braun and Heinz Haber, who worked with the Nazis. That's next Monday morning at 5 on Exploration, if you're the early rising type. We're going to go out with a piece from World Ocean Radio, and we hope to have this up on our website, this show, very soon. So thanks again. Thanks for tuning in and making us part of your Labor Day. You are tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
World Ocean Radio.
Radio ya Bahari Dunia.
Radio de l'Océan.
La Radio Océano del Mundo.
Champion de l'Océan.
Sayansi Bahari.
Solutions to today's ocean issues.
El mar conecta todas las cosas.
Welcome to World Ocean Radio.
I'm Peter Neal, director of the World Ocean Observatory. One of the first concepts we learn in natural science is the water cycle, Earth's respiration, an exchange of water evaporating from the ocean, massing into weather patterns that move around the globe, deluging the land to run down from the mountaintop across the foothills into the streams and rivers and watershed until it returns to the sea again. That cycle of water, its continuity, clarity, and utility is essential to our health, as water to drink, cleanse, irrigate, and sustain us, as the only thing we all need in equal amounts to survive. World Ocean Radio returns to water again and again in these editions because of the ocean as penultimate source of supply, engine for global distribution, guarantor of purity, and sustainer of its nurturing parts, the plants and animals, including ourselves, who cannot live without it. Indeed, there are circles and cycles in the ocean that occur and recur as currents and conveyors of heat and nutrients and consequent migrations that scientists continue to discover and measure that have implication for associated human interactions, fish populations, habitat, and localized meteorological conditions that correspond to food supply, patterns of work, location of communities, and the social requirements of living within this constant turning. The water column itself can be visualized as a comparable circular exchange, the fall and rise of food, temperature, pH, and the presence of light that determines micro and macro conditions along the way, in which some life flourishes, other does not, until we reach the ocean floor through which passes the generating power of the Earth's volcanic core. And then there are the winds, the circles of air, determined by temperature, or more recently, the sudden increase in emissions resulting from the energy of modern life, realized through undisciplined extraction, burning, and consumption of irreplaceable fuel, stored in the earth but now released into the atmosphere in critical amounts, particles of pollution and poison that not only affect the weather, but also the life cycle of species downwind around the world. Indeed, the Earth is parsed by circles of longitude and latitude that determine the measure of where we are in space, that guided the first sailors into unknown waters, explorers to unknown places and cultures, and merchants to unknown resources and riches. The seaman's log noted the position of the ship relative to the stars, the silhouette of the land, and the consistency of winds and currents, observations at the beginning of a system of trade, migration, finance, and societal integration that today we call globalization. History documents such cycles in the form of periods of awakening and discovery, competition, war, and the rise and fall of nation-states, the exchange of philosophies and religions, and the intermingling of ideas and bloodlines that document the twists and turns of acculturation and civilization. Meaning is hidden in all of this, and wisdom, it would seem, might still be derived from such knowledge and experience. Myths often turn around circular metaphors and cyclical behaviors of gods and mortals. They tell us of things past as an instructional manual for things to come. Change can evolve slowly over time, or it can happen suddenly, without warning, at some moment when all the gravity of circumstance forces history to turn unexpectedly, sometimes explosively. If we are so smart, why is it that we seem incapable of planning such a turn? We can engineer things, build instruments scaled large and small that extend the limits of our imagination, but we cannot seem to will our way out of our comfort zone, our complacency, when faced with ever-increasing irrefutable evidence that the wheel is turning down and away from us before our very eyes. The consumption-based society that we have built over the last centuries is at risk of collapse. The fall of its architecture and institutions into the sea forgotten if we do not pay attention. Recently, archaeologists found submerged buildings and statuary that spoke of a once great place and time. The underwater vestiges were mysterious, devoid of light, and imprecise, as if flooded by regret and remorse and guilt for failing to meet the one great choice required to sustain itself in time. Continuity ended. There was no ensuing generation. The ocean took it all, and one wonders if that cycle had to be, and why that circle was broken. We will discuss these issues and more in future editions of World Ocean Radio.
World Ocean Radio is a project of the World Ocean Observatory. Visit us online at worldoceanobservatory.org.
Thank you. for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.